Well, hello everybody who's here and who's joining us online this evening. We are at our Future Melbourne Committee meeting here in South Bank. We're absolutely delighted to be here for meeting number 47 on the 22nd of November 2022, and we're kicking off at 6 o'clock. We are delighted as councillors and management to be here with you all. I think it's our biggest one so far, which is exciting. Certainly best catering so far, just saying. And we're looking forward to all the conversations this evening. We are on the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. We also, across our municipality, govern on Bunurong Boonwurrung land, and we always also pay respects to elders past and present and to any elders who are here with us today. We acknowledge and honour the unbroken spiritual, cultural and political connection that the Wurundjeri, the Bunurong, the Jajawurrung, the Tungwurrung and the Wadawurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin have with this unique place called Naam and have had for more than 2,000 generations. We are committed at the City of Melbourne, if you haven't guessed already. We are very committed to our reconciliation journey, believing strongly that every effort we make to strengthen relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples has benefits for all Victorians. This meeting is being streamed live, as I said earlier, and an audio and video recording will be made available on our website by close of business tomorrow. The draft minutes of this evening's meeting will be made available on our website as soon as practicable. Speaking of being practicable, could we all please check our mobile phones and make sure they're on silent or they're switched off for the duration of the meeting? That makes it better for everybody. The agenda this evening comprises 7 reports from management and what I expect to be a very long question time and submission time. So welcome everybody, and we appreciate your patience as we listen to others and hear from our officers this evening. We do have apologies from Councillor Campbell and Councillor Chang, and you may have noticed we have Councillor Dr. Ball and Councillor Leppert joining us via tech this evening, and I'm just going to see whether Councillor Leppert and Councillor Dr. Ball can also see us and a screen. You can, good, screen for motions this evening. Excellent. Well, that means we're ready to go. I'm advising members of the committee that where a decision is made on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour of it, that decision can be referred by a councillor to council for decision. That brings us to item 2 on the agenda already, disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020, please disclose the nature or type of interest prior to consideration of the item. Thank you, councillors. Item 3 is confirmation of minutes of previous meeting, and I'm calling on a councillor to move a motion adopting the minutes of open meeting number 46 held on Tuesday the 8th of November, and that motion should come up onto the screen. So mover, Deputy Lord Mayor, thanks, and a seconder is Councillor Hakim. I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. Thank you, councillors. We are underway on tonight's agenda. Were there any matters arising from those minutes that you'd like to raise at this point? None. Thank you. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with our governance rules in relation to agenda item 6.1, which is neighbourhood key issues and City of Melbourne projects for South Bank. We've had requests to speak from Tricia Avery, Secretary of South Bank 3006 Inc., David Hamilton, President of South Bank 3006 Inc., Tony Penner, President of South Bank Residents Association, Adrian Kidd on behalf of NBL Team Melbourne United. We've also had items of correspondence from Fred, DeMunk, Rhett, Ollie, Sandra Mayo, Colin Gunther and John McKenzie, Tracy Allen, Karen Jemison, Simon Thelke, Argy Fry, Tricia Avery, Lee Lazaruk, David Hamilton and Tony Penner. In relation to agenda item 6.3, which is planning permit application TP-2022, Dash 112, which is 392 Little Collins Street, Melbourne. We've had a request to speak from Paul Jones, lead signatory for the petition submission to reject application number TP-2022-112. And we've also had items of correspondence from Paul Jones and Matt Gorman. In relation to agenda item 6.4, which is planning permit application TP-2020-19, which is 501 to 527 King Street, West Melbourne, we've had requests to speak from Ben Porteous of Urbis, Alex Ray from Hayball, and items of correspondence from Ben Porteous, Alex Ray, and Carl Heshin. In relation to agenda item 6.5, proposed property divestments, we've had a request to speak from Kelly Langford from Midwives and Mothers Australia and Janet Ireland of Midwives and Mothers Australia, and also items of correspondence from Kelly Langford and Janet Ireland. In relation to agenda item 6.7, which is governance rules amendment consideration of community feedback, items of correspondence from Kelvin Thompson, B. McNicholas and Mary Lou Howie. And that's it in terms of submitters and request to speak. Was there anybody here this evening that thought they'd put in a request to speak, but I did not read their name? What item, Richard? Is it a question? Oh, well, we'll have question time in a moment. But in relation to any agenda item this evening, Jeremy? The third? 6.1. Submission. So let me make sure I remember that. Aaron, thank you. That's it. Good. All right, well, we're ready to get going. And we do say to submitters that you'll be invited to speak at the time we're considering the relevant agenda item. We do allow 3 minutes for submissions, and we'd appreciate it, given the number of people here tonight, particularly if you could keep to your time limit, please. To assist you, a bell goes at 2 minutes so that you know you have 1 minute left, and then it goes again at 3 minutes. And at that time, if you can finish your presentation, it would be appreciated. Thank you. At the start of all our Future Melbourne committee meetings and also at the end, we allow 15 minutes of public question time. We're at that stage now. It is item 5 on the agenda. And we do that so members of the public can ask questions. They can't relate to an agenda item because otherwise they're a submission. We have been encouraging the pre-submission of questions so that we can be organised with information, and it certainly helped during COVID as well. We've got a number of pre-submitted questions, but if you're here tonight and you want to ask a question, Richard, and I know you know this already, we allow 90 seconds for the asking of questions. And again, if you could keep to that time, it's actually surprising how long 90 seconds is, then we'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. There have been 6 public questions received, 4 of which will be asked in person, which is fantastic. And I note that in reading out these questions, we're not attesting to the veracity or factual nature of any statements made. So they're the questions, the other 2 questions we might read. Just before we do start, and Sarah River, you're our first one in case you're here, we invite you to come up to the podium just here and say your name and your question. And if you think you might want to ask a question but you're not sure, we do have 15 minutes again at the end if that suits you for further questions. So please don't feel you've missed out. We allow 15 minutes. I feel like I've spoken for way more than 15 minutes already, but we may need to extend question time depending on the number of hands that go up in addition to our 6. But we're going to take these 6 and see how we go. Now, I don't know if Sarah's here to ask her question in person or online, in which case I'm going to read it. It relates to my portfolio, City Transport Infrastructure and Operations portfolio. And Sarah asked, now that South Bank Boulevard is almost complete, when is the development of Dodd Street supposed to start and finish? Thank you, Sarah. Very pertinent question. And Jonathan Kamboris, who's our Director of City Projects, who is here this evening, usually hiding down the back. Do you want to put your hand up, Jonathan, just so we all know who runs our city projects? Thank you. And Jonathan has pulled together this information. The tender evaluation of a preferred contractor for the Dodd Street landscape works has now been completed, and Council will consider that report from management next week on the 29th of November. With Council approval of the preferred contractor at that time, construction will begin in January 2023, which is really exciting. It will take us 12 months to do those landscape works, and we're looking forward to getting everyone involved and lots of feedback. It does comprise the project high quality paved areas, mounded grasslands. Now, I say a lot of things I've never said before as Lord Mayor, but mounded grasslands is the first time I've ever said that in my life. And the next one, swales, mounded grasslands and swales with native planting and trees. Thank you, Jonathan. Civic meeting spaces and seating, walls and features, and lots of public lighting. There are many other elements to it that we'll have more visibility over once we see that contractor and works get underway. Sarah, thank you very much for your question. I'm now going to invite Councillor Dr. Ball to get involved in the next question from Adam Vince. I'm just checking, is Adam here in the room? No, over to you, Councillor Dr. Ball. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I can read Adam's question. He writes, as the council is aware, we have a nuisance individual who has called Queensbridge Square home for approximately a year now. This individual plays loud music, which disrupts nearby residents trying to enjoy the peace and quiet of their homes. I even know of a few residents who have sold up and moved out of South Bank recently due to this individual and the nuisance he creates. We understand that being homeless is not a crime, but this one individual seems to get away with defacing council property by way of graffiti, begging, etc., which are crimes, as I understand it. The makeshift home he has set up at times is also a poor look for the area. What are the next steps in assisting this individual and cleaning up Queensbridge Square in general? These days, it only appears clean on the days when you are in the area with the media. So thank you for the question, Adam. I have, I'm pleased to say, a response from our Director of City Safety, Security and Amenity, Dean Robertson. And he writes, we too are concerned for people experiencing homelessness and the impact that they have on the amenity of the area in which they live. We are aware of issues in and around Queensbridge Square and are acting on them. The City of Melbourne has a dedicated team which 7 days a week patrols and engages with people experiencing homelessness. This team refers people to support services and ensures amenity is not negatively impacted, which includes ensuring people's belongings are kept to a minimum, and that access and thoroughfares are maintained and that behaviours are compliant with relevant laws and standards. Further, our team regularly works with Victoria Police on issues of a criminal nature, including graffiti and antisocial behaviour. If anyone witnesses criminal activity, we encourage you to contact Victoria Police for them to respond. I understand, Adam, that you spoke to one of our team members, Tom Robertson, this morning, and that he has followed up with your query by email, and he's interested to meet with you and any other concerned members, residents in the area. So I do hope that proceeds and that is fruitful, and that we look forward to learning from these discussions. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball. I am now going to invite Tim Brashard. Is Tim here? No. Was that your question, Jeremy? Oh, it is. All right, we've got him down as a question. Would you like to jump up and ask that? No, it looks like it's in relation to stage six.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeremy Vincent, President of Yarra River Business Association. Apologies from Tim Brasher, who's caught on a plane that's on Sydney tarmac. The Yarra River Business Association wishes to thank the Council for its work to date on the transformation of South Bank Boulevard, but is a little bemused about the claim that the project is completed. Stage 6 of the original project was designed to connect the gardens with the river, yet it still seems to have quietly dropped off the project agenda. We understand that Bueller International's plans may have complicated Stage 6 of the project, but could the business community at least get Council to agree in the short term to remove or significantly modify the eyesore of the red steps in Queensbridge Square, which has suffered from maintenance neglect for many years and the structure has failed its original purpose?
Thank you, Jeremy and Tim. We have a, well, Jonathan Camberis, as I said, Director of City Projects, has provided a response, but I believe that we can come back and provide or do some more thinking about the red steps that we're famous or infamous for in many ways. But the response is that the development and delivery of Stage 6, which is that city road to Queensbridge Square, as you said, is being coordinated with adjacent developments in order to ensure that disruption to the surrounding precinct and suburb is minimised. The projects are delivered collaboratively, so we maximise both the benefits of resources, work time, and ultimately benefits to the community. We will keep everybody up to date. I know that a lot of concerns and issues raised with us from this community relevant to some of the discussion tonight is about communication. So here's a good example where we can be more proactive in keeping you up to date with progress. And once planning has commenced, we will come back to you on the red steps to see if there's something that we can do in the interim. And we absolutely accept, all of us as councillors, that South Bank Boulevard project is not yet complete. We have Stage 2 at Dodd Street and Stage 6, which is this part still to do, and we're very aware of that. So we will keep in touch, and please know that we acknowledge it's not yet done. Thank you. We're very happy with the playground, though, and the other elements. Now, Janine Patterson is here. Please come on up and ask your question, Janine. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. Good evening, Lord Mayor, councillors and members of the public. I stand here before you today on behalf of the South Bank community to address the lack of community facilities and the impact this is having on residents when these facilities are ripped away by developers. South Bank was delighted 2 years ago when the basketball half court was opened, and every day I walk past this facility on my way to work and I observe just how much people enjoy this facility. Now, we know that the sale and subsequent development of the old Boy Girls School site was a necessary evil in which to use some of those funds, maybe not all of them, to deliver green space to the residents of South Bank and bring the Boyd Community Hub and Park to fruition. However, early work seemed to have shut down the basketball court prematurely, and the community has had 2 basketball courts closed in which over the last 2 months due to developments, leaving the neglected South bereft of recreational facilities. This means that South Bank residents need to travel to the city of Port Phillip for recreation once more. This is causing both disappointment and anger within the community that the Undercroft development has not been appropriately timed as promised. So my question today is, can Council provide us with an update on timing for the construction of the Undercroft basketball court now that the early works have commenced at the Boyd Park site?
Janine, thank you so much for your question and your leadership. We at the moment can't update you on timing because the negotiations with DOT are ongoing. We need to make sure that the occupation terms for the space are of a sufficient time frame to be able to invest and give surety to our residents as well in terms of the use of that space for a decent amount of time. Nonetheless, whilst those negotiations are ongoing, we have started on the design for the Northern Undercroft, those are progressing, and we'll be looking for community feedback in the new year so that you can get involved in what can be delivered there. And once we get through this election, I think we can return with new gusto to those negotiations. But it is important we get the, you know, as you know, it's owned by DOT, and we really need to get the appropriate occupation, can't remember what, occupation terms for the space, the right lease.
Thank you.
Thanks, Janine. We know how important those spaces are as the project there in Boyd Park gets underway. And we lose the basketball courts and the flower beds. All right, thank you. I'm somebody helping me with time. You were going to, Michael. Kirsty, you are. Okay, good. We'll keep going. We are going to invite Bill Thompson to ask a question. Bill, welcome. Come on up.
Thank you for the opportunity. At the last FMC meeting, there were a number of questions posed about the ATEP floating nightclub. So these are a number of questions sort of following on from that. So what is the status of attempts to resolve this issue? What are the current operating limits imposed on ATEP? Are the operating limits likely to change in the near future? Does COM deem ATEP to be the indoor entertainment venue or an outdoor entertainment venue, and that has downstream consequences in terms of noise limits and so forth? At the last meeting, there was a statement by one of the staff of City of Melbourne that measurements have been made and the assessment was that they were operating within prescribed noise limits. So I'd ask the question, what are the prescribed noise limits? Where are these measurements being made? And also at the last meeting, it was pointed out that noise measurements themselves mean something to in terms of a standard, but the real impact is on residents inside their apartments. So have any measurements been made at representative apartments inside the apartments themselves? I had asked the City of Melbourne this question about providing the analysis report, but that wasn't available, but that would be useful. And when is the extended amended planning permit likely to be considered by the future Melbourne committee, which would extend ours to Sunday? That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. They're all good questions. And yeah, thank you for your interest in this matter. I will now read out a response to the question that has been provided by Julian Edwards, who was our Director of Planning and Building. Julian, just want to put your hand up so that everybody can see and know who you are. Good, thank you. So this is what has been written. Following the opening weekend, Council investigated the venue and formed the view that the noise was likely to have been excessive. Since that action, the venue is currently operating in accordance with the approved planning permit and associated conditions. The conditions impose restrictions on trading days and hours, the number of patrons, noise and venue management, to name a few. The noise limits are prescribed in the EPA protocol 1826.4, so EPA protocol 1826.4, and are assessed by appropriately qualified acoustic consultants. Measurements can be taken from anywhere and three key locations to the north, south, and east have been selected at the closest residential buildings. Acoustic testing is not required inside of residential premises to determine if a venue is compliant with the protocols. Calculations can be different depending on the venue, type of noise and location, ambient noise and time of day. If levels are compliant outside of a building, then they will be compliant inside. Council's independent peer review is not currently publicly available as it forms part of an investigation. However, it confirmed that the initial acoustics assessments was suitable. Council is continuing to explore with the operator and relevant authorities the most appropriate response to amenity concerns, including the location of the venue. The request to amend the planning permit to include Sunday trading will be considered at the 6 December FMC meeting. And I might just add to Julian's report there by saying, Bill, we have heard residents loud and clear on this, and I want you to know that we are all over it. We have, as councillors, we have made multiple site visits at quite late hours of the evening, I should say, as well, just to satisfy ourselves that what we're hearing is correct. We have also had numerous discussions around the independent acoustics, and I can say I have verified for myself the acoustics framework that we have put in place. And I don't claim to be an expert in these things, but it seems pretty good to me as far as an acoustics framework goes. There's a lot of effort that is going in on that front. I can also report to you that when I say we are all over it, we are also in discussions with multiple agencies and other parties about the location of the venue as well. And I don't have anything to report on that this evening, but we are working on it. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for your response, and thank you for all your hard work to resolve this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, we have passed the 15 minutes, and I do have just one question left, which was Richard Hunt, and you were in our list for questions. So I'm going to move a motion to extend our question time by that one question, and any other questions here we can take later on this evening. So I'm moving that motion. Councillor Griffiths is seconding. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can keep going. And I'd like to invite Richard Hunt up to ask his question. Richard, welcome.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors, everybody present tonight. Two very quick questions. One is, thank you so much for the new rock park for the climbing kids on South Bank Boulevard. My grandkids love it. Could we please put up signs to have no smoking, no alcohol, no glassware, and no barbecues? Because last time I was there, someone brought their Weber barbecue. There was oil splashed there, smoking, glassware, all of the above. So I did report that someone came out from local laws and had a look and wrote some things down, so that should be in your record somewhere. Thank you. Thank you. The other one is regarding the changes on City Road between Powell Street and South Bank Boulevard. You're taking away one lane of traffic in front of the BMW building, which will be the new Bueller complex there, reducing the traffic flow from three lanes to two lanes on an already heavily congested road. This will only cause more congestion and holdups. I wonder what surveys have been done in this area, and has anyone from council driven along that area recently on a regular basis, especially at peak time? It's quite horrendous. It seems some of these surveys that are done, supposedly by experts, but us, the residents' point of view, doesn't seem to be taken seriously enough into consideration. This is just my personal point of view. To ease congestion, my suggestion would be put the trucks back through the tunnel. They go through the Burnley Tunnel, why not the other tunnel and all the big traffic? So please, can anything be done to rectify the situation? Thank you.
Richard, a lot of good points made there. Thank you firstly for your feedback on the park. Aren't humans wonderful? We'll follow up with our officers. Secondly, on City Road master plan with the traffic, we might have to take it on notice, Roger, I'm not sure. On notice? Okay, we'll come back on the surveys. And has anybody driven along there recently? Hands up if you have driven along there recently, constantly. We certainly understand the frustrations. And as to trucks, as we walked here tonight from the playground, a big live sheep truck went past, which is really ridiculous. We absolutely positively agree with you on that, and DLM's been picking that up quite loudly, but we'll have to keep going on that one given it's a state government. But in terms of the survey work and understanding what happens with the traffic, we'll come back to you. I know we've got your details, so that's great. Well, thank you, everybody, for question time. It means that we can move on to our item six, which is reports from management. And the first item is agenda item 6.1, neighbourhood key issues and City of Melbourne projects for South Bank. And we are going to ask for a presentation on this item from our Director of Community Development, Rushta Halith. And we welcome you, Rushta, to the microphone, and then we'll be doing questions before we go into comments from councillors and debates. So, Rushta, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Good evening, councillors. It's really good to be here in South Bank and to be able to talk about our neighbourhood model. Next slide, please. So the neighbourhood approach is a major initiative in our council plan, as you know, and really the intent is to try and achieve three things. We understand that our municipality is made up of very diverse neighbourhoods. We know South Bank is quite different to the CBD or North Melbourne, or we know that Kensington is yet again very different to Dockland. So the first thing that the neighbourhood model is really trying to do is how can we better understand the unique strengths and priorities and needs in each of our neighbourhoods, and how do we use that knowledge to help guide action at City of Melbourne. The second thing that we want to do with the neighbourhood model is when we identify these priorities, how can we actually work in partnership with community and key stakeholders to realise these shared aspirations? And it was really great to talk to community members beforehand, and a lovely sentiment was shared by one of our community leaders who reflected, it's not about you doing, it's about we. How can we do together? Which was good to hear. And a really underpinning sentiment and principle of the model. The third thing that the model is seeking to achieve is this principle of inclusion. How can we make sure that we're hearing from people from across our community and reaching people who may not have engaged with council before? Sorry, I'm having a tickle in my throat today. And there's work to be done there. And we've made a good crack with this first round of engagement in community. Next slide, please. Thank you, Lord Mayor. So what has the first stage of engagement looked like? This has all been about, we had a council plan endorsed, so it was about going to each of our neighbourhoods to really test what does this mean for South Bank, for example, and what are the local priorities relating to what we've already identified in our council plan? What are some of the gaps? Is anything missing? What is important to you in your community? These were the conversations that we were having. And while this was a rapid consultation, which had two stages, we received 800 pieces of feedback from South Bank, which we will continue to engage with community over time and build on. And this really helped us identify some of those local priorities. Initially, when we started this process, we thought we were going to have a neighborhood plan for each of our neighborhoods. But when we were talking to community members, we heard clearly from them that they wanted a more dynamic way of engaging with council, a more responsive way of engaging with council. So it's resulted in us developing neighborhood portals, which is a website, which is hopefully a channel which can promote two-way engagement between community and council. Ash Lee, who is our neighbourhood partner for South Bank, is here today, and Ash has been working very closely with stakeholders in community, including key partners like the South Bank Resident Association, South Bank 3006, as well as the Yarra River Business Association, who've been fantastic supporters of this work. Today we wanted to do a quick demonstration of our portal so community members can see what information is contained and how they can also participate. So So this is the landing page of our neighborhood portal. And there's different ways you can access the information. So recognizing that our community, when we say community, we talk about people who live in the community, our residents, businesses, people who work in our community, university students, visitors, and so on. So the portal is structured in different ways that you can actually access the information. So if you clicked on the live icon, for example, you're able to then scroll down and see the different resources available for you to connect with, explore, contribute, access quick links, and so on. There are a few resources on emergency and disaster preparedness, which has been a recent topic that we've heard a lot from community about there as well. These sections allow community to actually see some of the news that's popping up, that's relevant in your community. And recently we've got a South Bank Community Resilience Assessment currently live on our participate pages. A major initiative in our council plan is called Prepare Melbourne, and it's delivering community resilience assessments across City of Melbourne neighbourhoods, and starting with a pilot in South Bank. So an expression of interest was recently circulated to local residents, businesses, and community groups to participate in this pilot, which the purpose of it is to develop actions to build resilience with the community, within the community, and incorporate them into the neighbourhood portals. In the events section, you can see the different events that are currently highlighted for South Bank. And there's a local activities section, which is where community can... This is an opportunity for community to add their content. And this is actually a survey that's currently up from the Yarra River Business Association. Yarra River Business Association is a fantastic organization that supports small to medium businesses located on and along the river. It's one of the 8 funded business precincts by City of Melbourne. And they have a survey currently open on how to make the area the very best place to live, play, and dine. There are different sections in the portal where you can go in and have a look about more information on the neighborhood, but a key section that we thought we might jump into are the neighborhood priorities. So these were some of the priorities when we started to talk to people in South Bank about what matters to you, what do you see in our council plan that is a priority for you in South Bank, what are some of the gaps, and this is what they told us. So this is a really useful page for community members to visit and understand some of those local priorities. And if you click on any of the sections, we might just stop at sustainable living, which is one of the key priorities identified in South Bank. There's a summary of what community told us and what we're doing. And this will be a place where we will continue to provide regular updates on these priorities that have been identified. Community members recently have asked us lots of questions about the Power Melbourne initiative, which is the work that City of Melbourne is doing to partner with both state and federal government on opportunities to deploy community batteries across our municipality. We've announced a partnership recently with the Victorian government through their Neighbourhood Battery Initiative recently to fund the first battery in the Power Melbourne project at Library at the Docks, at the dock. The charging of electric vehicles is another initiative that the community is really interested in. And we know that retrofitting of apartment buildings to accommodate the charging of electric vehicles is a challenge. Given the infrastructure of buildings, this is a common challenge that community have reflected to us and we deeply understand as well. But at City of Melbourne, we're currently developing a policy to enable wider access to electric vehicle charging in the future, including the potential for on-street charging. This is a new initiative and we know that it will take time, but one of the interesting facts to highlight is that City of Melbourne Municipality has the largest concentration of electric car charging stations in Victoria, which are located in places such as commercial car parks and shopping centres. We might also just highlight another key priority for the community, and this is talked about a lot, the lack of open space in South Bank. And the council plan sets the objective of increasing the amount of public open space in the municipality with a focus on areas of greatest need, which prioritizes South Bank. We're currently in the process of investigating options, including land acquisition, to increase the amount of public open space, a public EOI process for available privately owned sites in priority areas of South Bank was completed in early 2022, and market scanning is ongoing. Unfortunately, we haven't found a suitable site yet, but there is also a review of the open space strategy currently underway that will be completed in early 2023. And this will provide a clear and refined direction as to the highest need sub-precincts and the most effective way to provide more public open space in South Bank. The last one that I'll touch on is pedestrian safety and road safety and the opportunities for improvement. So this is a key priority in South Bank, as we've touched on. And a quick update is that with the community's feedback and input, we understand that this is such a critical issue for locals. We at City of Melbourne have accelerated this project and will commence traffic studies and initial consultation with the community in early 2023. This is with our pedestrian safety improvement project, which is kicking off in early 2023, being brought forward because of the feedback that we've heard from community. On that note, I'm going to hand over to Roger to talk to us about the South Bank structure plan and audit.
Thank you, Ushta, and good evening, councillors, and good evening, members of South Bank. Good to be back, and I used to live here for a couple of years, so I feel like I'm back in the hood, just living over the road there. Thanks, Ushta. I thought I'd just touch on our investments in South Bank from a capital works perspective for this year, which is published in our neighbourhood plan. Just to recap, we're spending $2 million on public art, $5 million on Dodds Street Lineal Park, as Lord Mayor stated, starts early in the new year, which is very exciting, $2 million to progress the delivery of the City Road Master Plan, $190,000 to reduce speed limits within South Bank, $600,000 for cycle infrastructure, and $760,000 for other green space infrastructure and cultural projects. We also spend around $1.5 million will be invested on renewal projects in South Bank, including roadways, curb and channel works, medium and tree plot renewals, safety city cameras, library materials and property. And approximately $1.3 million will also be contributed to maintenance work in South Bank, including at community facilities, creative spaces and other property, on pedestrian infrastructure, wayfinding signage and for urban forest health. And as Ushta stated, we do have that $20 million in our council budget for securing some open space in South Bank, using all our networks to try and find the appropriate site. It's been difficult, but we continue to negotiate and source with private landowners. So hopefully as the market softens a little bit, councillors, we may be lucky to find an appropriate site in the new year. Just touching on the structure plan. So I do recall Lord Mayor and Tony Penner, we were here probably in the first few weeks when I joined the city back in March 2021, at the South Bank Community Forum. And at that stage, we were asked to provide an update during the year on the 2010-2020 South Bank Master Plan, or the 30-year vision document. So we committed to do that, and we provided what we call the audit report in September 2021 that was published, and that outlined where we were at in relation to that master plan and what had been implemented, what was in progress and what was to be in the future years in planning. We committed to also then provide a further update, which we've just completed in September 2022. Some of that is on the pages you see here, and what we'll do shortly is submit on the portal, Ushta, that update for 2022 that outlines again just what's been updated since 2021, obviously with COVID impacts, and good to see a lot of development and planning coming through the City of Melbourne. So we'll capture that. We did provide also an update for the South Bank Residents Association at the AGM, Deputy Lord Mayor, on the 21st of November, which Mr. Penner invited us along with Minister Foley. So we provide an update on that as well. Next slide. So again, I've touched on that. So that just provides an overview of the long-term commitment to South Bank, our capital works program this year. And again, we'll be in the process in the new year of updating that for 23-24 budget. Next slide. And again, there's a snapshot of what will be in the September 2022 audit report. So we've just captured, if you like, a status report of all the actions that were in the original document. And working with Evan Council's team, just trying to capture what we've completed, what's in progress, what's in the future, what's in planning, so that we capture and make sure that we're reviewing this structure plan every year and then trying to consider what we can implement into our budget planning for next year and for the next 4 years. I think that's all I have. So I'll hand over to Andrew Weir, Director of Economic Development and International. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger, and good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors and members of the South Bank community. South Bank is a really quite an important business community, business precinct in the City of Melbourne. And I want to provide just a couple of highlights, really exploring what's happening in the economic environment in South Bank. Go to the first slide. South Bank's really been quite an incredible success story when it comes to the recovery of this city. We've seen in South Bank recovery probably more vigorous than we've seen in any other part of the city in many ways. Pedestrian activity on the weekend in South Bank is currently exceeding 2019 levels by more than 50%. It's much busier on the weekend than it was before the pandemic. It's quite a remarkable rebound in many ways. And even Monday to Thursday, if you like, is still basically on a par with pre-pandemic levels. So activity really is rebounding strongly. And in the evenings, at nighttime, the story is even much stronger, even again. On Friday to Saturday nights, up 51% pedestrian activity in the precincts. So we're seeing quite vigorous and enthusiastic responses to the offering that South Bank has for visitors to the city. Next slide, please. And that's reflected in the spending that's occurring in the city. There's many small businesses that exist in South Bank rely on spending from visitors particularly. And most of that spending is coming from visitors outside of the City of Melbourne. South Bank is very reliant on visitors. South Bank businesses are very reliant on visitors. And that spending is in areas such as dining and entertainment, which makes up 47% roughly of all spending, and retail and clothing also. But what you can see there is that's the purple line on the graph there, is that spending in South Bank is almost back to what it was in 2019 levels. And in fact, earlier in the year, it's exceeded 2019 levels at different times also. Again, quite a healthy response to the sort of post-pandemic environment. In terms of support for businesses in South Bank, the City of Melbourne has been very, very active. Next slide, please. We'll go through our business concierge service is staff members who is explicitly tasked with engaging with small businesses across the city. And they assist new businesses or prospective businesses with everything they need to get started, existing businesses to expand. By having conversations and discussions with businesses, we're able to gather those insights and feed those in to shape the plans for shaping the city. And they provide a one-stop shop effectively for all the points of access across the city. If there's grant funding available, if there's permits, anything that they need to navigate, those business concierge staff are there to help. Even just this year alone, there's been more than 23,000 contacts with small businesses across the city that the business concierge has led. We've spoken with roughly 150 businesses in South Bank, and including 69 of those face-to-face, we've gone out and actually spoken with those businesses. And what they've told us is that people really do like living and working in South Bank. It's a great part of the city. I like the proximity to the city, the walking options, the public transport options. But businesses definitely do better when there are more office workers around, and they would like to see office workers come back. And also they see that the infrastructure in the city in this part of the world is also quite important, as we've heard from others. Everything from mailboxes and public toilets through to other business offerings such as ATMs and bakeries and that sort of thing. And we've been very active in supporting businesses in a more collective sense through the South Bank, through the Yarra River Business Association, which we work with very closely and we support quite intensively. The association receives funding through the Business Precinct Program and additional funding to support through the recovery, through the pandemic recovery. We're supporting very actively South Bank through Christmas. You would have all seen the Christmas activations in South Bank, everything from through the Christmas star on the Evan Walker Bridge through to the pop-up playground and the Elfie Selfie at Queenbridge Square. There'll be a Christmas festival on the 18th of December on South Walk, on the Common Lawn on Duke's Walk. And we're supporting all sorts of activities like that. And then finally, we have $100,000 grants available for nighttime activations through our Dusk to Dawn grants. And we really would encourage everyone in South Bank who's a member of a relevant group to consider applying for that. We're looking for activations at night that will help bring people to the city and keep South Bank and other parts of the city active and vibrant, and help those small businesses that rely on that visitation. Applications close on the 16th of December. But at that point, I will leave it there and hand back to you, Lord Mayor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow, that was very comprehensive from our three officers. Appreciate that. Lots of interesting updates and information, and really highlighting the role that our neighbourhood portals can play in being proactive with our community. So we're looking forward to those really coming alive and being utilised as we go forward. We've now got time for submissions. And Tricia Avery is first off the rank as secretary. No, David Hamilton's going to do it on behalf of Tricia Avery, on behalf of South Bank 3006. So, we've swapped the order. I've got it. Thank you. I'm with you now. David, then Tricia, then Tony, then Adrian, then Jeremy. Jeremy did the question instead for Tim. Got it. I'm with you now. Thank you. Over to you, David Hamilton, President.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. On this slide, you'll see the four key challenges that are arising from the neighbourhood consultation in South Bank. And underpinning each one of these is a consistent theme from residents for localisation, whether it's for council services to support communities, or facilities to support livability, or better traffic management and open space. These results, the reason that this is key down here is that this results from South Bank being a brownfields dormitory suburb with no thought about the social infrastructure needed to support it. And we've addressed this in the submission that we've given to you tonight. Thankfully, the neighbourhood process is a key first step to redress it. So again, people told you in the studies that they want local traffic and open space challenges addressed, something that a grand plan like the City Road Master Plan cannot address. Instead, we need low traffic neighbourhoods, reclaiming and repurposing road space as open space for community use close to where people live. And there's a question, should you abandon the City Road Master Plan? We need to make City Road work as a state highway and the major arterial that it is. And importantly, we need to make CityLink work as it was intended, not what it has become. And council needs to take the lead on making all of this happen. And finally, there's a gaping hole about South Bank, which the consultation threw up. That is, just what is the economy of the future in South Bank? It's totally unclear, other than some vague ideas about retail and coffee shops on City Road, and that's not the economy of the future. We're not advocating that council try and pick winners, but we need processes to identify the strengths and the resources that can be deployed in South Bank, particularly to foster knowledge-based industries. Whether these are based around data analytics or the arts, it's unknown, but we need to a process fostered by council, stimulating people to think about what South Bank can offer to incubate an economy for the future. The future for coffee shops will be the modern equivalent of selling shovels in the gold rush. People will make money, but they are not the gold rush. This is what we see as a major challenge, and the neighbourhood program needs to confront that in 2024. And we're willing and able to work with them on that. Now, Tricia will talk specifically to the destination problem. Thank you.
Thanks, David, and for also introducing Tricia. Tricia Avery, I know it's, you come right down the front if you like, no?
Thank you, Lord Mayor, thank you, councillors, and thank you, everybody. I'm going to talk a little bit about more, notwithstanding what's already been said today, I think it's very important to note that we in South Bank live with a high number of visitors to our precinct. South Bank has high visitor tourist value. That comes with both a dynamism, but also a challenge for locals. As well as the glorious Yarn, Jeremy, Windsor Melbourne's renowned and very important both national and statewide arts precinct, and of course, the development of the multi-billion dollar NGV and the upgrade to the Arts Centre. A couple of questions for you all. How do we integrate large visitor and tourism numbers into a suburb with more than 22,000 residents without losing livability or amenity? How do we create low traffic neighbourhoods with hundreds of daily visitors? It's not all about the river. It's not all about the hospitality businesses. How do we ensure the economy of the future for South Bank, as David already said, is not just hospitality, but South Bank generated and located businesses? How do we attract corporate HQs that have a proximity to the CBD to settle in, like PwC, for example? Pre-COVID, the Census of Land Use and Employment, CLUE, great name, revealed that 41% of the workers in South Bank were employed in retail and hospitality, 41%. Most of which will be along the Yarra Promenade, so servicing the destination venues and mainly visitors to that precinct. Post-COVID, this percentage will have grown as we change our work patterns into hybrid working. Therefore, pre-COVID, we had 22,000 full-time residents, 25,000 office workers here from 9 to 5 approximately, and this raises the question, whose needs should have priority? The evidence from overseas, e.g. Barcelona, is that destination facilities, unless they specifically develop neighbourhood programmes, alienate residents and impact on accommodation, with housing stock being redirected away from long-term residential accommodation with families and other growth residents into short-stay apartments. There appears to be some evidence of that emerging in South Bank recently, with residents increasingly voicing concerns about noise from hospitality and the arts precincts, concern for safety in the hospitality areas walking at night, litter, and of course the rise of short-term accommodation in certain high-rise buildings. These development issues are fundamental and need to be addressed by the neighbourhood development initiatives of the council, engaging with hospitality businesses and the arts administrators and communities themselves, the residents, to overcome potential fundamental social development issues before they engender a them and us conflict. We are aware that there may be some that believe that South Bank residents are looking at these issues from a NIMBY perspective. However, the growth of the hospitality sector and now the arts sector with the new NGV is outstripping the residential growth. Therefore, there is a real current need to pay attention. We at South Bank 3006 believe the council is best positioned to take up all these issues, whether they are community connection, safety, short-term accommodation, noise or litter. Thank you.
Very comprehensive. Thank you, Tricia. Interesting phenomenon, something for us to think about. We are now introducing Tony Penner from the South Bank Residents Association president. Thank you.
Thank you, councillors, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor. So much to say in so little time, 3 minutes. What a shame for such an important meeting being here in South Bank. Firstly, the South Bank Residents Association thanked council for the holding this Future Melbourne Committee meeting in South Bank. This will hopefully encourage our community to come along and see how council operates, allowing our community to feel council is more accessible and have a genuine interest in South Bank. However, also I would have loved to have nothing more to have been here meeting and commending council on their works within South Bank and endorsing their initiatives. Sadly, in the most part, this isn't to be the case tonight. City Road upgrade is an integral part of the South Bank plan, with City Road West to have been completed by June 2021. These works haven't started or been budgeted for over the years, and over the years received very little discussion, despite it being a point of contention raised by SRA at almost every budget. The status of these works are not even mentioned in tonight's officer's report for this meeting. Of greater concern is the very recent announcement by council and the stipulated in the officer's report and the press release, the completion of the Transform South Bank Boulevard project. This project has six stages, with stage two, Dodd Street upgrade, and stage six, connecting the river with City Road. These are yet to be delivered. SRA, in particular myself, have been involved with this project from inception, with particular focus when it went to FMC in 2015. It has been quite some time, and I have a lot of history on this project. How can council declare this project complete without these two stages yet to be completed? Connecting the river was a central feature of this plan. Is this an attempt to, on paper, reduce the current budget blowout of this project by stripping these items out of the project and reallocating the money from somewhere else? Aware of the upcoming Bureau of Development, but they want stage six finished as much as we do and are prepared to contribute to it and work around it with their development in our discussions with them. If indeed the South Bank, the Transform South Bank Boulevard project isn't complete, then why on earth would council send out press releases declaring the project complete? There is so much that the community was waiting on with stage six, particularly the removal of the red stairs to join the activation of the river and the rest of the community. Also, the dog park on the northern side of City Road was highly anticipated. In fact, we were surprised not to see any mention of this within the neighbourhood portal, which we've just seen, under the heading of Dog Friendly Neighbourhood. Within that heading, there is a section, what we're doing. We would have thought mention of this in that space as an identified project for dogs would have been a logical place to have made mention of that. Also I spoke very recently with Jonathan Camboris about that particular dog park. In that conversation, he told me that he was not aware of any dog park on City Road. That is certainly a red flag from my perspective and also the wider community. We would like to commend council on the recently opened play space between Fulton and Kavanagh Streets. This is a bold and edgy and complements South Bank being the centre of Arts Melbourne. However, the opening of this wasn't without controversy. What we have received deviates significantly from the community, from what the community were informed to expect during the early consultation phase. It is nothing like the render on the project's website, yet in the most part, the renders for the entirety of that project were correct. How could this render be so wrong? Clearly, someone in council had a new idea for this space and they have failed to communicate that to the community. Had the community been communicated and been on board with that project, then we could have alleviated a great deal of that controversy right from the beginning.
Tony,
thank you.
Oh, that's it. Well done. Sorry, I was trying to get the bell to stop just to give you that bit of extra time. But Tony, thank you. You didn't hear it. Oh, that's after years of training, no doubt. To not hear the bell. We receive respectfully and openly your feedback this evening on many of those issues and acknowledge your concerns and you know, as usual, thank you for calling us out on the things and areas where we need to do better. Ongoing discussions, but continuous improvement. So focused on that. Thank you. Now we're going to hear from Adrian Kidd on behalf of Melbourne United National Basketball League. Come on down, Adrian. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. As you have noted, I'm here on a single issue of basketball courts. I won't take much time. A lot of my thunder has been taken by a previous question, which has been competently answered. But look, the issue is that we had, or we have, 1.5 basketball courts at the moment. Shortly, we will have none. Now, I just repeat that. We had 1.5. Shortly, we will have none. Now, that would mean we have no sporting facilities for people in South Bank that I know of. I've heard about the Undercroft. I haven't seen any plans. I haven't seen any arrangements. I haven't seen any costings. I really would like to see plans and costings. All I'm looking for are a couple of street basketball courts. No buildings, no lighting, no air conditioning, no toilets. Just somewhere where the young people especially can throw hoops. I don't think that's the right expression, but you know what I mean.
Shoot hoops. We don't want to say it on its own.
Yeah. Thank you, Lord, shooting hoops. All you need is a floor, a fence, and two hoops. I would recommend that the people on council who are designing the Undercroft, I think they should submit these plans and costings to Melbourne United, our local NBL team. You seem
maybe
surprised.
We could pay for the basketball courts. Now we're talking. Go on, Adrian.
You seem surprised, Lord Mayor. Now, we do have a national basketball team right here. I think it's in the city of Yarra, actually, at John Cain Arena.
Oh, in our city, Adrian. Yeah, we know them well. Larry Kesselman, who owns it. That's why I was joking a little bit there about getting Larry involved in delivering some basketball courts.
Well, Larry's the man, yes. I think Larry could be of great assistance there. Don't quote me on that. but it's very pleasing to note that you have John Cain Arena in the municipality. But look, two street courts in South Bank are what the kids need, the same as they need that new playground, which has been such a great success. Thank you.
Adrian, thank you. Look, points well made. Councillors are just looking at notes to each other as you're talking, because we're thinking that we'll be asking the team just to see if we can have any quick responses to basketball courts and those red stairs as a couple of highlight issues that hopefully the least we can address from tonight, to be able to show goodwill and progress on things that are important for the community and therefore important to us as well. Thank you very much to all of our presenters this evening, submitters. I am now going to call on a councillor to move the motion that appears on the screen now in relation to accepting this report. And that's Councillor Dr. Ball. Thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball. And a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Hakim. Thank you. Councillor Dr. Ball, back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you to Andrew, Roger and Rishta for your excellent presentations and to Tony, David, Tricia and Adrian for your questions and appeals to council. This is all extremely valuable. I speak to commend this report to everyone here present tonight, because it will be of great interest. Although it has been already presented very ably, I think there's more in the report that will interest you. You've already heard about our efforts to expand public open space in South Bank, which is terribly important. Our commitment to public art, but large and small artists' studios and residencies that are available. Of course, the important health and family services that local government provides, the children's programs, the efforts we're making to keep Southbank clean and beautiful. You'll see that we have responded to 400 instances of dumped rubbish, which is a problem that we are very keenly aware of and endeavour to respond to very quickly, and have removed nearly 3,000 square metres of graffiti from Southbank alone. The sustainability measures that are detailed in this report, including a grant to the Southbank Sustainability Group, I hope some of you are present here tonight. Thank you for your efforts. Who'll be using this grant to create a composting hub for those Southbank residents, most of whom don't have gardens of their own to use and generate compost and make use of it. There'll be a hub created, which is excellent, and also the potential to house or locate one of our proposed community batteries in Southbank. And we're very keen to hear on your feedback on that idea and many others. Of course, the library that that is in Southbank is a gem, as of all our municipal libraries, and the other community spaces and resources that that we are active in providing in Southbank. We have thousands of bookings with hundreds of different user groups and individuals for these community facilities. So all of that detail, if you're not aware of everything that local government does in Southbank, have a look at this report so that you are aware and can make the most use of everything. And, of course, we're keen on your feedback always on how to improve it. So Rushta has kindly demonstrated the Southbank online portal, which is now live, so I urge you all to have a look at it. And even when we any other times we hear from the community on some unrelated matter, if it pertains to Southbank or they mention they're from Southbank, it gets accumulated into these hundreds of, and it will soon be thousands of, separate pieces of feedback. And through this process we can identify this specific, one of our speakers was talking about localising council services, we get specific feedback specific to this part of our municipality, and have so far in this process, and it's very early days, identified 14 local priorities that the community is calling for from local government to work on. So that is active and constant iterative feedback and democracy in action in Southbank, which we're delighted to be innovating at this time, and I hope it is useful and appealing to you. I will also mention that Rushta mentioned some time ago, Ash, I don't know if Ash has already waved her hand there in the room, but she is your neighbourhood partner, which means a council employee who is specifically, whose job it is to be your specific human point of contact for everyone in Southbank to local government. So it's important that you know who she is. You can find her contact details through the Southbank neighbourhood portal, which is at Participate Melbourne. And if you go through the portal and look for it, it's a chat with us or something, you'll find Ash there and her email address and other details. She's a very impressive community development professional and we're delighted to have her on the staff. What an asset. So, well, excuse me. I will conclude with a very serious and very important matter in the report to highlight and re-emphasise, which is the community resilience assessment that we are currently undertaking for Southbank. We can't be any more aware of the vulnerabilities of our community in this climate crisis. So we need to prepare at community level for the specific needs of each of our neighbourhoods. I urge you to have a look at this. Begin with the report, have a look at the portal. It closes this consultation with Southbank, closes on the 19th of December, so you've got some good time yet to be involved. Through Participate Melbourne, or there is a community workshop being held next week on Tuesday the 29th. I would urge you to be involved. And that's it from me. I commend this report to Council.
Thank you, Councillor. Dr. Ball, over to you, Councillor Hakim. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball. I echo all those comments and that fantastic summary. Thanks everyone for your work on this report and everyone who's submitted on this. Certainly it's clear from the room today and from your submissions, the passion and the activation of our community and how active our community is here in South Bank. I want to recognize that it's really important. It is active communities that drive change, and I want to commend you for all being here and for making sure that your voice is being heard. There's so many different ways to do that, and this is an important forum for that. So thank you. I know I've attended one of the meetings with South Bank 3006 and saw how active the community is on local issues. And so, our local residents and businesses that are working here and delivering are really important to make that happen. And the neighborhood process, as you've heard, is certainly all about that. This is only the beginning of action and how we engage through this neighborhood process. I know that, and I found out as I've come on to council, this is my first term, we're halfway through, but it does take time in the way that things go through council. There are budget cycles, etc. But it's great to have the portals up now. We are receiving that feedback. It is coming through these portals. And as that progresses through the cycle of council, being able to progress to policy level, to budgets that are allocated to it, and to planning to deliver on it is something really, really critical. And those high priorities that are coming up when we hear from you are the things that we want to make sure we're focusing on, as we spoke about today, the basketball and particularly green spaces here in South Bank, as well as the red stairs. So that's something that I just want to share. I know Councillor Ball mentioned the Boyd Community Centre and Library. It is the smallest of our libraries, of the permanent libraries, but a really active library. And we've got some really terrific community organisations in there. I was there for the birthday party earlier in the year, and it was great to be able to speak to everyone there and see the engagement. It's a beautiful building as well. And I know that the loss of the space behind it is going to be a loss for South Bank. So working to deliver that as quickly as possible is important. But importantly, South Bank is also home to the Arts Precinct. Such amazing institutions, the NGV, the MSO, the Australian Ballet, and so many more that make up our creative communities. There is so much for us to do, and I want to also how we communicate that is really important. So please do continue to provide that feedback for us, because we can that continuous improvement is something that's important, and I look forward to how we progress that through our neighbourhood portals and neighbourhood planning. And I commend the motion to councillors. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hakim. Any other speakers to this motion this evening? Councillor Lippitt, over to you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. The mover and seconder have done a brilliant job, so I won't add too much. I just wanted to acknowledge that I shared Tony's surprise with the way we've described the completion or non-completion of the South Bank Boulevard. And again, we've heard the need to constantly improve the way that we communicate updates on major projects to the community. Certainly the purpose of South Bank Boulevard is not only to provide new open space to the local community, it was also to provide an alternative cycling route to the South Bank Promenade, noting that there's been many, many calls for decades to separate as much of the pedestrian and cycling traffic as possible. And now we've got a little bit of a bottleneck in what will be stage six of the South Bank Boulevard project, which is where we still don't have safe cycling infrastructure. But once that's in, hopefully we can see some of that movement in local traffic, of which we've heard quite a lot about today. So it is very important that stage six is done. We've heard about stage two commencing in the new year, but it's heard loud and clear that the council, when setting community expectations, either needs to follow through on them or be very, very clear as to why that's not happening. Beulah by South Bank will have a open space contribution, which will more than cover, I am sure, the cost of delivering stage six. It just comes down to timing, because the way the open space levy works is that that comes through at the point of subdivision, not at the start of the construction of a project. And certainly cash flow is something that all councils in this state post-pandemic are very, very careful to make sure that we consider closely. So I do think that it will happen, but I also think that timing is now the main consideration, and that the delivery of that Beulah project is the prime consideration there as well. I'll leave it there. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Leloup, thanks.
Thank you. And I think just wanted to say thanks to everyone who just spoke about South Bank. It's a really interesting, someone who used to live in St Kilda, where it used to be really about an artistic community and very bohemian in some ways. And I think when I look at South Bank and investment in terms of the art going into there, how can we, make for me, South Bank a place where we can get all the young artists and sell a lot of the works from there? Because, when we talk about South Bank, it is the art precinct that we have, we promote that to the world. And I think also it's quite important that, there's a lot of international students who lives in this particular area. They also have also spoken the great need for a lot of the, infrastructure and also open parks, open spaces that is needed. But most importantly, I think a lot of them, as she said, they love South Bank because not because of the vibe, but also it's because the people who live in South Bank are probably one of the most friendliest and also probably one of the best. So really commend for the great turnout. I think it's probably the best, the most I've actually seen of all the community events. And how do we actually turn into that? And I think we really do need to deliver, because if Beulah does come on and other developments comes in, that's an increase of X amount of people who's going to be coming in here. I use the basketball court myself. I also walk my dog around here as well, and I think there's a real need for this particular area, and at night time, it's just buzzing, something that I really love. So we really got to deliver, and I hope in the next couple of years and very soon we will be able to deliver that. And I think mistakes do get made, but I think at the same time it's not about the past, it's about how we can actually rectify them and also to fix them. And I think we need to really we hear you loud and clear, and that's something that we want to be putting that forward going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Leloup. Anyone else? Look, I know that many of us wanted to speak tonight, but it's already been a long night. But can I say on behalf of all councillors, thank you very much for your submissions, your ideas, your accountability. And we look forward to continuing to work with you on those important projects. We're going to move then to putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That's to note the report. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you, everybody. That brings us to agenda item 6.2, which is Major Initiative 3, Generating New Employment Opportunities for the Creative Sector. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. Then I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you. And a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Doidge. And that means we can come back to you, Councillor Hakim, as mover. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thanks, everyone, for your work on this. I know that officers have put so much effort into this program. To Katrina, to Justine, to Adriano and Andrew and the team. So much that has happened here. It is no secret, really, that the creative sector, we've spoken about this for the last few years, has been really hit hard in COVID-19. The pandemic has shone a light on what's already been a vulnerable and insecure workforce. So many art workers are not only employed in the creative industries, they also work in our hospitality industries, they work in retail, so they really hit doubly hard. So I'm really proud of the care that our officers have shown in with the sector over this very challenging time. We have responded with initiatives, and many of you may know, but if you don't, it's responded with initiatives such as releasing an extra $2.5 million in arts grants that our investment team got out to artists in record time. For example, even our short grants, our small grants programs, we get them out in 19 days for those programs. That's nobody else does that anywhere in the country. From EOIs going out to a grant, getting to artists, 19 days, and that's really important to get people work and ensure that they're able to deliver things. And things like projects such as the Flash Forward project, 40 new laneways, 40 new music albums. We are now the biggest music producer, private music producer in the country, independent music producer, which is amazing. So right here in the city of Melbourne. And this was all supported by the Victorian government's Working for Victoria Fund as well, with a $2.5 million. The Flash Forward directly employed 168 artists over 2020-21. And also during 2020-21, the City of Reactivation Event Grants Program funded 52 events in partnership with the Victorian government through the MCRF fund, and that employed 418 artists and performers. Of the City of Melbourne delivered premier events, 5,820 creatives were engaged in roles such as performers, producers, designers, projection artists, curators, AV specialists, and face painters, and so much more. So it's been a huge effort. Also, Arts House, if you haven't been to Arts House, do check it out. But it is Melbourne's home for contemporary performance. It employs 398 artists and art workers, and has a program with artists with disabilities as well. It's a terrific sort of space. We have Art Play and Signal creative programs. They are delivered both online and on-site, with programming for children and young people, and engages a total of 529 artists, technicians, and stage managers. That's right across the bank of the river from here, just near Flinders Street Station for Signal, and down at Birangmar for Art Play. So terrific kind of spaces. And of course, Council's Art Investment Program has funded a total of 8,486 artists, enabling direct employment and support. The kind of important numbers, and because of the what it means to not just the city economy, but to people's livelihoods, to their jobs, and the what is quintessentially Melbourne. Of course, central to this is Melbourne's economy recovery, is the nighttime economy and how that helps drive visitation. Melbourne's nighttime economy is really comprising such a particularly strong entertainment subsector. So in 2020 and 2021, Melbourne actually gained 51 entertainment establishments. That's a 9% increase. That's the biggest growth. Was also in creative and performing arts activities as part of that, 33 of the 51. So that's over half of the entertainment subsector is made up of the nighttime economy. And by June 2021, more people were employed in this industry than in June 2019, which is fantastic, especially since as we went into the pandemic, artists and creatives were looking at leaving Melbourne, and that would have been a real dismal kind of disappointment, but they've been able to stick here throughout that process and grow, which is really great. We know that there is more to do, and indeed the creative resurgence does depend on it. There's so much that we have to do. So this report speaks to what we are doing right now and our plans to really strengthen that sustainability of this sector moving forward. We've heard so much from the sector around the many skilled workers who have left over the last few years to more secure, more reliable and well-paid employment, particularly in tech and production areas. So that leaves a resource and skills shortage likely to continue for some time. It's difficult to get people back in this space. So we do have to invest in upskilling and providing a space that people can come back to. Particularly noting that the creative industries makes up a significant portion of Victoria's economy as well, and job aspects. Around 9% of jobs in Victoria as a total are in the creative industries. We've also heard that access to digital infrastructure and capability in digital production and presentation is a real challenge for small and medium creative industries and organizations. There are businesses that are small micro and micro businesses that are delivering works throughout the city. We are very much committed to supporting and improving digital capability for our creative workers and for advocating for access to infrastructure, because ultimately it'll create additional employment opportunities. It'll mean that more people can access what is quintessentially Melbourne, the arts and culture that makes up our city, the creative essence of our city. And we also know that access to affordable development and studio space in the city, as well as presentation spaces, is critical to attract creatives back here and support employment. So we must continue to find ways to create spaces that support that. Of course, creative spaces, any loss of creative spaces would also be a loss, and spaces we do have are also important. And that's why it's a shame that we have over 200 micro creative businesses at risk of losing their home at the Nicholas Building at the moment. We know that regardless of what we do to create new spaces, it would take even more considerable investment and effort to build creative communities like those that have come up organically in the Nicholas Building. Sophie Travers, CEO of Collingwood Yards, noted that the Nicholas Building is at the heart of a network of creative spaces across the city. So the impact of spaces like the Nicholas Building has a profound impact on our creative industries investment and growth cycle, and is truly quintessential Melbourne. So today, the work we're committing to is about driving new spaces as part of our program, increasing support for employment in our creative industries. And that's something that is essential and critical to the fabric of Melbourne, to live, to play, to work, and certainly right here in South Bank, where we know that our Melbourne Arts Precinct is live and well, and where significant investment is coming in as well over the next 10 years. So really happy with this report and the work. I commend the motion to you, councillors. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Hakim. Councillor Deutsch.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. And thank you, Councillor Hakim. I think you've given a very comprehensive and detailed analysis of just how important the creative sector is for Melbourne's economy, but also for our city's character and culture more broadly. So I might just keep this snappy because I think Councillor Hakim has kind of touched all bases. But what I do want to talk about very quickly is, you know, the energy and the vibrancy that the creative sector brings to Melbourne. It's not just to the city, but it's specifically to our streets and our cafes, our laneways, our neighbourhoods, just like South Bank. And I think, so looking at it like that, so creating secure employment opportunities in this sector is so incredibly important. It's an investment for our city far beyond just creating jobs here and now. It's about city building in a way. And finding secure employment in the creative sector, I'm sure we're all well aware, is not an easy thing to do. And, you know, you can't necessarily create jobs in the creative sector the same way you can in other sectors. So I want to give a bit of a shout out to, I don't know if there's anyone here who works in the arts or in Melbourne's creative sector, but wherever you are, know that we see you, we hear you, and most importantly, we appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Deutsch. Are there any other speakers to this motion this evening? No, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands with a flourish. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried in support of our creative sector. Thank you. I'm now calling on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Nicholas Rees, to assume the role of chair for this part of the meeting, which is about the city planning portfolio. Thank you, DLM.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are indeed two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. The first one of these is Agenda Item 6.3, Planning Permit Application TP-2022-112. for the property 392 Little Collins Street, Melbourne. Now, I do understand we've had quite a large number of objections to or submissions on this item. So I'm going to call on Nathaniel Mann, who is a manager of statutory planning, to make a very brief presentation, just so we can understand management's reasons for their recommendation. Thanks, Nathaniel.
Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, and everyone. Councillors, before you this evening is planning permit application 2022-112. The proposal is for a change of use of the lower ground level tenancy on the subject site from a restaurant to a tavern. Next slide, please. The site is located in the capital city and has two street frontages. To the south or below is Little Collins Street, and to the west, to the left, is Panfolk Place. Next slide, please. This is a street view diagram of the a photo of the subject site. On the left, where the four lease sign is, that is the independent access to the commercial tenancy, while the middle opening is the access to the residential building above, which is known as Fairfield House. Next slide, please. This slide shows the area of liquor proposed to be sell and served. It's noted that in the capital city, so the planning permit is not required for the sale and consumption of liquor. Next slide, please. It's noted that the tenancy is completely indoor. There's no outdoor area for the proposed use in the entire venue, as I've said before, is within contained within the lower ground level. The proposal is proposed to have 80 patron maximum with the hours as shown on this presentation. It's noted that it's obviously a recommendation that the hours of operation of the closing hour be reduced between Monday and Thursday to 11 p.m. after balancing policy and objectives concerns. It's also worth noting that the entryway will be condition required that external door to remain closed at all time other than the time that patrons are entering or exiting the premises. The applicants also propose that music to be background music only. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathaniel. Any questions from Nathaniel? Okay, thank you for briefing us this evening. Now I now call on Paul Jones, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome, Paul, and a reminder to please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, City of Melbourne staff, for your valued time this evening. I've been a resident in this building for the last 10 years. I'm very passionate about my community. I'm not just here about representing myself tonight. I'm here also representing about five other residential buildings in the area. It's a unique part of the city, which is very residential in nature. It's a bit like going into the Cheers pub. We know each other when we walk past each other on the street. Some of the concerns I have with the report are that the Capital City Zone Schedule 1 states that when deciding a permit, the relevant authority must consider the impact on the amenity of existing dwellings on adjacent sites. This does not appear to be done within the report that's been presented to you tonight. I'd also ask, if the applicant's willing to reduce the operating hours, why haven't they submitted an amended permit to address this? It's just been written into a council report, so I'm concerned what is actually going to be approved here. I don't believe the amendment to that has actually been done. It talks about the separation of the commercial space to the residential space. So bear in mind, there's one commercial space and 31 residential apartments above it. It talks about the separation. Yes, there's a concrete pillar at the front. That's just the facade. If you actually walk inside the door, you'll see on the left, there's a very, very thin piece of glass separating the two spaces. I also have concerns with respect to how the sound checks have been done, solely because there's two owners' corporations in operation here, and the commercial space does not have access to the residential space. So I'm not sure how they've actually carried out their sound checks. Having a stage when it's going to be, the sound's going to be reduced to people being 600 millimetres apart, being able to speak actively, I don't understand the purpose of a stage apart from having live music on it. The applicant also talked about addressing customer behaviour, talks about when they leave the building, that we're talking about a tavern here, not a restaurant. People will leave, go around the corner into Penfold Place, have a cigarette and go back. There's no addressing of that concern there at all. And finally, as I said, this is a tavern and not a restaurant. A tavern serves alcohol and finger food. A restaurant serves food and some alcohol. It's going to present a lot more antisocial behaviour than a restaurant would. So if you approve the tavern tonight, you're in effect telling us residents in the capital city zone that our concerns, our representation within the city doesn't matter. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that presentation. A couple of points raised there. Margie or Nathaniel, would either of you like to address them? In particular, I'm interested in the point about operating hours and conditions.
So your question relates to the operating hours?
You're welcome to address any of the points that were raised by the Paul, but I wanted to make sure you, in your remarks, that you covered operating hours.
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry, the changes.
Sure. Yeah. So the operating hour, obviously, when we assess the application, we need to balance the policy and also the, you know, the surrounding uses. We understand that, as I've said before, this use is completely indoor. There's no outdoor area proposed. We've also included a condition requiring a venue management plan, which I think previously the submission regarding the behaviors potentially outside of the property. This is something that will be addressed within the venue management plan, which the staff of the venue will be responsible in making sure that, you know, customer reminded to not stay outside or within the area that result in impact to the residents above. So there are other, we also understand there are other late light operation within the area. We just make sure that the hour is similar to those, and we're not having the sort of people visiting the area or customer visiting the area that will be concentrating in that area, which including a number of hotel. There's a hotel, which is the hotel at the corner of a little Collins and Queen Street. We just make sure that there's no like people loitering within the area.
Right, thanks for that.
Thank you.
All right. I'll pick up some of those points in my comments as well. I'm going to now move a motion, which I would ask to be please put on the screen. This is an amended motion that we're going to be moving here, which I do believe will respond to some of the issues we have heard this evening, and I'll speak to some other matters as well. So I'm going to move that motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. So let me begin by saying that we I do recognise that your lovely little corner of the CBD has been for a very long time a residential precinct in the city, or a mixed use precinct in the city. So this is not one of those instances where it's been a particularly noisy part of the city and residents have just recently arrived. I would also note that the pedestrian foot traffic through the city has increased quite significantly post-COVID. Last weekend, last Saturday and Sunday, it was 13% higher than the same weekend back in 2019. Now, overall, that is a good thing for the CBD. It's part of us having a vibrant city and a vibrant economy. But of course, we as a council need to closely monitor and manage these things so that you can enjoy the amenity which you have every right to enjoy where you live. I do note that this particular application is for a change of use only, so there's no exterior buildings or works that are required. The tenancy was previously occupied by a restaurant and it does have a separate entrance to the residential building. I do, as I said, recognise that there have been significant concerns raised amongst the residents at Fairfax House and in particular they go to the amenity impacts of a tavern on your homes. I will say that I do think that the steps we've taken with the conditions which are in this report, plus the additional conditions which we're now putting into this resolution this evening, I do think will go a long way, I hope, to addressing the concerns you have raised. As Nathaniel was explaining to us, this application does need to be assessed against the Melbourne Planning Scheme. The Melbourne Planning Scheme does define Little Collins Street as a retail and entertainment precinct. So it does, the planning regulations of Melbourne envisage that venues like restaurants, like taverns, that use is seen as a legitimate one along that stretch of Melbourne. And so if you look through the officer's report, they are correct in their finding that this is a application for use which is consistent with the Melbourne Planning Scheme and should be supported. Having said that, there are some significant conditions which I do think will go a long, long way to preserving the amenity. The first of those is that we have put in this additional condition which will require that any music that is in association with the venue must be limited to background music level only. I did hear your point about there being a small stage in the plans. And so I want to make it very, very clear this evening that this bar cannot be used as a live music venue. And that, as is being agreed this evening, it will be for background music only. And so I cannot envisage a scenario in which amplified music could be played from the stage. It just couldn't be consistent with what's being conditioned here this evening. Secondly, we have capped the patrons at this venue at 80. That's well below the 100-person threshold, which would be permissible ordinarily with an application like this one. And thirdly, the bar will operate until 11 p.m. on weekends, weeknights, I should say, and midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. This has been revised and negotiated by our officers with the applicant as a result of some of the concerns that you have raised. And it has been included in the conditions which council is being asked to support this evening. So I think that I accept that there's challenges with the application, but I do think on balance what we're putting here together in its totality is something that should be acceptable to councillors. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I support the motion, obviously, as the seconder. I acknowledge the concerns of locals in particular. This little neck of the woods with MacKillop Street and Penfold Place and Queen Street has been construction site for many, many buildings for many years now. And living very locally during the pandemic was a trial at times. So I can completely understand why the prospect of a tavern opening at the bottom of a residential building is a matter of concern. As Nathaniel and the Deputy Lord Mayor have set out, our job here is to consider whether or not a planning permit should issue, and it's a planning permit for change of use only, and there is no basis to refuse that. If the applicant was presenting, I would certainly have sought to ask a few questions. For example, even though these are matters for the building permit, not the planning permit, I note that there's a male WC plus three urinals, and so plenty of space for men in the bathroom there. The female toilet is shared with the disabled toilet for both sexes, and so I don't understand if there's enough facilities there for women and how that's going to work. And noting that there's a disabled toilet there, but no ability for anyone in a wheelchair to get down the stairs because there's no stair lift or ramp. I'm not sure how Disability Discrimination Act compliance is going to work. So again, all of these things are a matter for the building permit, not the planning permit. Cannot take them into consideration today, but they have raised questions in my mind as to what the purpose of the venue is going to be. And I do hope that any changes that need to be made to ensure that this is a venue that's genuinely accessible through a gender lens, but also a disability lens, is going to be taken into consideration. The only reason I'm happy to agree with conditions to bring back the hours and to lock in a requirement for background noise only is because the applicant has volunteered that those are things that they are happy to live with. There is no strong planning basis to require either. And so if the applicant were to come back and seek longer hours or seek a different understanding about, you know, acoustic live music or whatever it happens to be, well, that's entirely within their right. I do know that lots of live music venues in the city of Melbourne, which are quite small, have a much stronger track record in terms of on-street amenity issues once the bars close than some of the bars that don't have the live music function. So it remains to be seen what sort of venue this is going to be. But there is certainly no basis for us to do anything other than support the permit for change of use. And I do wish the applicant well. This is an area where local residents and the council are going to be very, very concerned to ensure that those amenity impacts are minimised as much as possible. And in that context, I certainly wish them well.
Thanks for that, Councillor Leppert. Are there any other councillors who wish to speak for or against this motion? Lord Mayor.
This application and the conditions and the issues have been well discussed by officers and also by the Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillor Leppert. So thank you for that. I did want to pick up on the point that Paul asked, the point you made, and that is that if we approve this tonight that we don't care about residents. That's not the case at all. I know we've been having lots of ongoing conversations, but in this precinct, which is, as the Deputy Lord Mayor identified, noted for being a hospitality and retail precinct, we've got to find ways for residents and businesses to coexist. And on that basis, I particularly note the efforts of officers and the Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillor Leppert to look into the conditions within which the applicant will operate in relation to hours, in relation to music particularly, and some of the measures that have been put in place to find that balance between residents and businesses. And that really is one of the most difficult tasks we have as a council and councillors, is to try to find that balance. It's a regular discussion at Town Hall and with residents and businesses. I did want to say that, as both of our movers and seconder have said, remaining vigilant on complying with the conditions is really the next stage, assuming that they get a building permit, to Councillor Leppert's points, but remaining vigilant on that interaction, making sure that that balance is working, is something that we will need to do with residents. And Paul, you mentioned Cheers. I hope it ends up being a tavern like Cheers, where everybody does know your name, but more importantly, that they want to not just make you welcome as patrons, but they want to make you happy as residents. And I think that's an important conversation to have with the applicant going forward. But on the basis of properly implementing the laws and the planning scheme that is in place, I also will be supporting this application this evening. But I don't want you to think that we don't care about residents. It's just getting that balance right. Thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the matter to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand on the screen as well. I declare that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us is 6.4, Planning Permit Application TP-2022-19 for the property 501-527 King Street, West Melbourne. Don't think we need a DLM,
I have a conflict on this item by virtue of a donation to my 2018 campaign, so I'm going to excuse myself now.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. All right, I don't believe we need a presentation from officers on this matter, so I will now call on Ben Porteous of Urbis, who requested the opportunity to address this committee. Ben, I know you know the rules, please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Yeah. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. I'd just like to start by thanking the council officers behind us. They've been great to work with, and they've collaborated with us on this project. We've reviewed their officer report and we support their recommendation. Next slide, please. Beyond the architectural expression, which will be addressed by Habel, we believe there are four key planning considerations for the project. This is consistency with the West Melbourne structure plan, activation of the laneways, ESD initiatives, and overshadowing of open space. Next slide, please. The proposal will advance the key vision for West Melbourne Structure Plan through an employment-focused development. This will provide a diversity of employment types in West Melbourne. The mix of uses will enliven and activate the Spencer precinct throughout the different stages of the day, week, and also provide services to the existing and future residents of West Melbourne. Next slide, please. The diversity of employment will be delivered through a variety of adaptable retail and hospitality tenancies to cater to a variety of different businesses. A children's play space, which will be important for the families of West Melbourne, especially when you look at the weather we've been having. Two levels of dedicated office spaces, resulting in more than 3,200 square metres of flexible floor area. Next slide, please. Rather than seeking to just maximise the built form allowances under the site's planning controls, the proposal has responded to the site context and the vision for light field internal laneways. This resulted in a building which is below the maximum floor area ratio, building heights and street wall heights allowed for the site. Next slide, please. Activation of the laneways has been a key focus for both Holder East and Council. This activation has been achieved through two retail and hospitality tenancies fronting both laneways, the provision of an inviting building entry from Mansion House Lane, and an on-site pedestrian connection between Mansion House Lane and Corporation Lane, which will be open to the public 24/7. Next slide, please. proposal to implement important ESD initiatives, which will result in a 5 points water credit under the Green Star and 5-star neighbours rating for energy. This is our delivered through electric first development, which is complemented by a 21 kilowatt solar panel system, substantial on-site bicycle facilities, and the provision of collection and reuse of rainwater. Next slide, please. The proposal will not result in any additional overshadowing of secluded private open space proximate to the site. And importantly, the proposal avoids any additional overshadowing of Eads Park. Next slide, please. We thank the committee and council for their consideration of this proposal and respectfully request the committee support the application.
Thanks for that, Ben. All right. Thanks for presenting this evening. Any questions for Ben? No, thank you very much. I now call on Alex Ray of Hable to present to us. Welcome to FMC.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor, Deputy Mayor and Deputy and Lord Mayor. I'm just going to be just providing a brief overview of the overall design. Next slide, please. From the beginning of the design process, the project team had a unique vision for a new type of development that would support and complement the emerging character of the West Melbourne neighbourhood. The primary goals, as Ben also talked about, was creating a mixed-use program that contained retail, commercial food and beverage, health and wellness functions, create a landmark place for friends and family to gather, and support an emerging residential precinct, and of course, offer a new retail experience for West Melbourne. Next slide, please. The project is located across Eads Park and on the corner of King Street and Rosman Street, and the site is, of course, easy walking distance to Flagstaff Gardens, Victoria Market, and numerous other green spaces, playgrounds, civic cultural destinations, and public transport. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of the ground floor pedestrian experience, the project is focused on developing a welcoming public space that seeks to weave the project into the existing network of laneways and promote permeability, legibility, and transparency. The main entry is located on Rosslyn Street, with secondary entries located on King Street and Mansion House Lane. From the main entry, the visitor is led into the building through a series of wide stairs that lead them through either the upper or lower ground floors. The arrangement was developed in response to a significant change of levels across the site and contributes to a rich, interconnected sense of place. Weaving the whole project together, a central atrium acts as an organizing space that visually links the lower retail and F&B spaces and the commercial spaces above. Filtered sunlight comes through the glazed atrium roof and animates all the spaces below. Stairs, glazed lifts, and linking bridges complemented with ample seating, dining areas, and planting contributes to the feeling of a space animated with people and activity. Next slide, please. The building is conceived as essentially a village of buildings at the lower levels that house all the retail, F&B, and public spaces. And then lightly floating above that form is the commercial office space that acts as a bit of a neutral backdrop to all the activity at ground. Next slide, please. The Village of Forms uses simple materials like sanding, steam, metal cladding, and glazing to complement and define the forms that that nestle under the office floor plates. More traditional materials that reference surrounding existing building, like brick and bluestone, will be used as internal pavers and articulated bases to the village forms. The office component above will use glass curtain wall behind a perforated metal mesh screen that will provide shading and set the stage for the village forms below. To conclude, the design seeks to successfully balance program, innovative urban design, and architectural form into a new public place to enhance the surrounding community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex. I should ask any questions for Alex? No. Well, thank you for addressing the committee this evening. I will now move a motion, which I would request please be put up on the screen. That's the one. I'm going to move that motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. West Melbourne is a suburb which is going through great change. And it's a suburb which has received a lot of planning attention from the City of Melbourne recently with our new West Melbourne structure plan. Our vision is to see West Melbourne become like the new Fitzroy or Collingwood of Melbourne. And so every application that we hear in West Melbourne at the moment is receiving even more attention than an application ordinarily would. And I'm delighted to say, and everyone is important, I'm delighted to say that this particular application that's before us tonight is of a really high standard and does an excellent job on delivering on our vision for West Melbourne. The building we are considering tonight is a 5-storey office, food and drink, mixed-use building, and it's on King Street there, which is an important gateway to the city. The building is a Hable design. I think you guys have done a great job with the design, and it's proposed to be 21 metres high with a floor-to-area ratio of 3:1. Now, considering that the relevant DDO for this area has a preferred maximum height limit of 8 storeys, this is a remarkably sensitive and well-considered outcome for the area. I'm also pleased to say that I think this has been a terrific example and a success story from the City of Melbourne's new Design Excellence Program. So the original proposal for the site did push the envelope of our preferred 8-storey height limit, and the applicant came back to us with a more well-considered 5-storey proposal. This was then taken through the Melbourne Design Review Panel, who recommended several important changes to the exterior design and the internal layout of the building. I'm delighted that the applicant has accepted most of those recommendations, and I think overall we've landed on a really outstanding design, and I think that's really important because this is a signature site in West Melbourne. It's a gateway site to the city. It's probably the first, I think it is the first big commercial application we've received since the gazettal of the West Melbourne Structure Plan. So this is really setting a precedent that's going to apply across the whole of West Melbourne. And I'm delighted to be able to say that it sets a really high standard. So it's going to be great for this development, but it's going to be great for the rest of West Melbourne as well. So, councillors, I do commend this recommendation and look forward to councillor support for it. Councillor Leppett.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I agree, it's a high quality application and we should issue the permit.
Anyone else to speak for or against this application? Now, in that case, I'll put the matter to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Checking on the screen, I declare that carried unanimously. Can we please invite the Lord Mayor to return to the meeting and resume the position of chair.
Thank you, Michael. 6.5. Normally I'm loud enough on my own, but it doesn't work for everybody online. And we're up to proposed property divestments in our agenda this evening. Would anybody like a presentation on this item? We've got a question, Councillor Leppard.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Just a question in relation to 100 to 104 Beckett Street, Melbourne. Two questions, actually. Has any early testing been done to suggest that the site is indeed potentially able to be well-suited for affordable housing? And secondly, has any consideration been given to any conditions we might want to put on a sale that would require the retention of mature vegetation on that site? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard, for your question and through you, Lord Mayor. With respect to the affordable housing question, I do understand that there has been some preliminary assessment of the suitability of that particular property for affordable housing, but in terms of the further detail around that, we'll take that on notice and provide that in future. With respect to the consideration of vegetation for that property, again, I think we need to be able to take that up and consider that as we move forward with this process, subject, of course, to Council's consideration of the recommendation this evening.
Noted. Thank you. Any other questions, requests for submission? No, thank you. I'm calling on Kelly Langford and Janet Ireland. Are you going to present together? Okay, good. Please come forward. You are from Midwives and Mothers Australia, Mama, and we're looking forward to hearing from you this evening. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you so much, Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors for having us here tonight. As the Lord Mayor said, I'm Kelly Langford and this is Jan Ireland, and we co-founded Victoria's first private midwifery centre in 2011 called Mama, and we're actually just going to start off with a short video that
one
we
minute.
Have. One sec, yep.
Okay.
Mama offers a vital service for mothers, babies and families. Midwife support and continuity of care is supported again and again by high quality and respected research. It is because of Mama that I had incredible support before, during and after the birth of my babies.
The building and the location are part of the unique and innovative service provided by Mama.
Mama provides a special service that prevents postnatal depression. It would be devastating to the community to lose Mama.
This is such an important and iconic building for the first midwifery clinic in Victoria. It provides such an essential service to thousands of local families.
So in 2011, when the federal government maternity reforms allowed us as private midwives to access Medicare rebateable midwifery care, we found a centrally located Melbourne City owned council building to open Victoria's first private midwifery centre at 38 Gatehouse Drive. This property had been vacant for 3 years prior and was had a short lease with the Melbourne City Council's Maternal Child Health Service prior to us renting it. Next slide.
Right from the beginning, we were welcomed by the public and the community. They even said in the newspaper we were the light at the end of a tunnel in a very under-resourced public health system. So we are the light.
Next slide, please. When we saw the property, we saw a shell of a building that was fit for purpose, somewhere that families could come, which had plenty of on-site parking, rooms that we could see women in for our midwifery clinic visits, but also they could go to the next room for a pelvic floor visit and go into our large space that we knocked down walls to produce, where we have our education space that services over 500 families per year. You may ask why it's important that we stay in this building, because for more than a decade now, we've made significant investments, both personal, financial and emotional, into this building and this community. Next slide, please.
Our mission statement when we opened in 2011 was to attack mental health problems, particularly postnatal depression, which is rife in Victoria and in all areas of community. We do this day in and day out from that building. When we're known to do that, people walk in and ask for help. We offer free help, not only private help. We found out, unfortunately, about the future of our building from a neighbour who got a letter from the council telling them. We never found out officially, and we have accepted an apology about that. When the council announced that the building might be sold, our bookings for birth went down 50%. So in February, March and April, we had very few bookings.
Next slide, please. As frontline workers during the COVID pandemic, we were able to stay face-to-face with our visits in such a large space. And we also kept all of our 32 part-time and full-time employees completely employed during that time. Next slide.
despite the property department quota, we did not align with the maternal and child health nurse services. We actually complement them. Mama provides care from the beginning of pregnancy through to 6 weeks postpartum, and maternal and child health nurse commence their wonderful care in the postnatal period and provide routine checks as per calendar. 24 hours, 7 days a week, you can contact a mum and midwife on a triage. Any member of the public could do that during COVID.
Next slide. While we waited to hear the fate of our clinic, we've put on hold some major projects. We had some universities in consultation with us wanting to study our model. We've stopped the expansion of our lactation services and our postnatal support mental health services while we fight to stay in the building. Next slide, please.
One thing the maternal, the Melbourne City Council consultation process made clear was that the community value mama. Of the 811 surveys completed on the four properties, 84% were in relation to us. 92% did not support the sale of the property. Our change organisation petition received close to 2,300 signatures. To simply characterise Mama as a privately run for-profit business, we find that really hard to take, because we have spent our whole life without taking a wage until the last 2 years when we got established. And does not align with existing service provision by council, undermines the value your community places on having this important health service available in the City of Melbourne.
Next slide, please. We urge Melbourne City Council to take its consultation process seriously and respond to what the community have asked for, that they keep 38 Gatehouse Drive in their portfolio and they continue to expand services with us for the Melbourne community.
All we want to do is keep working and keep serving.
Thanks. Kelly and Jan, thanks so much. And we do acknowledge the great work that you do there for your clients and mothers, babies, families. And we appreciate you coming tonight and staying here until item 6.5 to present and have this matter discussed. I just want to clarify, and that's why I was asking, that in accordance with the report this evening, there's a further two-year lease to Mama, during which time council will establish whether the property can be rezoned. And then at that point, there'll be further consultation. I'm just looking at our CEO to make sure that's correct.
Yes, that is correct, Lord Mayor. So we have the two proposed in the recommendation is a two-year extension to the lease. And then if we were to proceed with a divestment under the Local Government Act 2020, we're required to come back to council and commence another engagement process.
So that's not a 20-year lease, but that's certainly in response to, you know, all of the work and submissions that you have been undertaking over this period. So thank you very much. I call on a councillor to move the motion that is going to appear on the screen. Councillor Lalu, thank you. And a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Louis, thank you. Over to you, Councillor Lalu. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we just move up just to make sure that 16.5? Yep, that's fine. That's, thank you. We can go back. So thank you and absolutely for all the people who have actually participated in this process. And again, thanks very much for Mama coming in today and explaining. I note 2,298, nearly there, 2,500. And it's one I've been reading the comments regularly, so I do know the service and amount that is provided to it. So thank you for everything you do. I just want to also say it's never easy when we divest assets that is owned by council, but nevertheless, at the same time, you know, this is how the market works, which is we're in the business of selling, buying, keeping, selling. And at the same time, and I'll go into a reason why some of these, we do go into that, not because we absolutely do it just for the sake of it, but actually we actually go through a very rigorous process behind the scenes of identifying the things that we councillors need in light of the community, but also in terms of the value that it can deliver. It is, I note that the property identified, the four property identified, we've gone through section 114 of the Act, and we are all about as transparency. And I hope that when we do go through that engagement or community process again, that, you know, we give people the heads up, so that it's, people should be entitled to, especially when we do have a tenant in there or anything, so that there is a better communication. And I note, our own budget process sometimes when, and I remember Tony, who, SRA, always talked about, South Bank never getting to know about it until we read it in the paper. So we are committed to better engagement on that part. The current process, which we identify all the properties, has taken a very long time. But even behind that, there's another piece of work, which is the property management plan, and that was actually taking account all the assets that council has and going through it. And that took probably a good 2 years. So this was not done any lightly, and it was only done at the very minimal impact that we actually have to do. And the reason we're doing it was because we took a balanced approach, and some of the things were considered is, we talk about the maintenance cost of behind it. It costs probably more of tax rate payers money to maintain it, but also it also gives another opportunity for buildings to be revamped and given a new opportunity to become something that it might not be. And I think, the ones that we've identified, it's purely we want to see these buildings also have a great use and activation. We also note that the selling or the divestment of these properties goes, the funds that comes out of it goes directly back into community projects. That is the absolute essential. And, in terms of the value add that these property will deliver to other community projects is absolutely vital. And we are in a growing city. We are about to overtake, we're about to become the biggest city in Australia by probably 2032 or 30, I can't remember what it is, and so we have to deliver more and more on community infrastructure and also services, and I think that's quite important. Again, I note that we have been very transparent in all the things we do, and 12.6, note that if we do again go back into it, section 114 of the Local Government Act, we do need to re-advertise, but also in terms of 12.7, we actually our CEO will apply the proceeds of the sales to community infrastructure projects. So it's in the recommendation, and council has no other option but to make sure that the funds from that gets delivered into the wider community. So I think on that whole, it's always sad to see, something leaving our portfolio. But at the same time, it's something that we do need to do. I do want to thank our team for the amount of work that they have done in identifying and also coming up, giving us a balanced approach. And I hope that, whatever we, it would be great to see the great revitalization of these buildings, but also at the same time, the community infrastructure projects that will benefit from this will be, will be very useful to the people of Melbourne.
Thanks, Councillor Lalu. Councillor Louis.
How to follow, Councillor Lalu. I think you've answered everything. The council, as Councillor Lewis said, certainly doesn't take divestment very lightly. And with the July and August consultation, I think have given the communities the view on what they've thought. And thank the ladies from their presentation tonight. As I said, we don't take divestment very, very easily. But as Councillor Lewis said also, that any income revenue from any of the divestment will be reinvested back into community infrastructure. So I think that's the important takeout. And likewise, I thank the team. I don't think, it's not an easy task going through. It's not like just going through some addresses and then look at ways of trying to divest. But it's been a long, long road. It's been a number of years in looking at the total portfolio, and look, it may not be complete, but it's the way forward. And the consultation is as extensive as we can do it. So thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Louis. Any other speakers to this motion this evening? Councillor Lippitt.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I'll support the motion, not happily, of course. None of us really like selling public property, as we've heard from the mover and the seconder, and there needs to be a very, very high threshold before we even consider doing that. In the case of three of the properties, the properties are very clearly surplus to our current requirements, and it is difficult for those three properties — this is not Gatehouse Street, Kensington, but the other three — to turn those sites into publicly accessible council service function buildings. It is, whether that's because of heritage constraints or other constraints, these are buildings that will be better able to be utilised in the hands of the private sector than the public sector, because there's no real prospect in the short, medium or long term that those sites are required to provide a community service. On the contrary, we've been acquiring land, whether it's at Queen Victoria Market or Chelmsford Street in Kensington, or Adelaide Street in West Melbourne, in order to cater for services and the needs of growing communities. And we have to find a way to fund those property acquisitions and the capital improvement on those parcels of land. And we don't only rely on rates and fees, we also have to consider the property portfolio as a whole, and that does mean trade-offs from time to time. We can't only acquire. And so whilst this is very, very uncomfortable, I do think that the case has been made for those three buildings. I did ask a couple of questions about the Beckett Street building, because I do have a hunch that it is a site that would not actually be affordably able to accommodate affordable housing, just given the size of the heritage building and what it would actually take to develop that building. Let's remember that either side of those properties is fully developed residential units. And there's also an interesting question there about the mature vegetation, none of which is significant for the purposes of the planning scheme. But obviously, the vacancy of that building with a bit of space between the residential towers is something that those residents treasure quite strongly. And so there's a lot of concern about what the future use of that building should be. However, the threshold, should it be retained in public use for a public service that we need to put in that place, it doesn't. And so we need to look at our financial portfolio as well and consider that we do need some revenue from these buildings. In terms of MAMA, I'm happy to agree with the two-year lease. I note that it could be any of three zones, really, that could be rezoned to, and until we know which zone it is, we don't really know how to value that property properly. So it's still an open question as to whether or not that property should be sold. But I, for one, would like to know if the site is no longer to be public use zone, the local government schedule, but to be a different zone that facilitates private ownership and development, what those numbers are, what that actually means. And so there's a process to go through there. I think it's a process worth going through, but I note that there's no foregone conclusion there. We need to understand what that means and what it means to remove that land from a public use zone in the Melbourne planning scheme. Again, it's a site that is not required for municipal purposes, and it is highly unlikely to be in the short, medium or long term. It is not well serviced by public transport, and the reason it's so treasured by the current tenant is that it is that very rare thing in the City of Melbourne, which is a site well serviced by on-site parking. But it is not a public site at the moment. It's a private tenant in a public use zone, and so it's already an anomaly, and so there are legitimate questions there that we should be asking about just how long we would want to keep a property like that in the property portfolio. But we've heard the concerns from Mama loud and clear. That's why, in part, a two-year lease is the right thing to do and to go through that process as well. Finally, on the hypothecation issue at 12.7, I hate hypothecating things back to community infrastructure. We are going to do that anyway. Like, all of our funds are going into building community infrastructure for a rapidly growing community. But I do think it's worth agreeing to that part of the resolution as well, so that we can acknowledge that the proceeds from these sales will form part of specific communication back to the community that has had their say during this process. Because let's not beat around the bush. The community has said, don't sell these properties. In each of those four occasions, that is what the feedback has said. Taking the broader view, I think on balance, it's still the thing that we need to do, that we're going to almost be required and back into a corner to do. But yes, at the very least, we should be explaining to everyone who participated in that community engagement why the proceeds from those sales will be benefiting the local community for decades to come. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Any other speakers to this motion? Then I'm going to put the motion to vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. This brings us to agenda item 6.6, Bedford Street Pocket Park Final Concept Plan. And I'm looking to see if councillors would like a presentation on this item. No? Then I am calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Leppert, thank you. And a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Deutsch, thank you. Back to you, Councillor Leppert, thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. This is a proposal that has undergone multiple stages of community engagement as well, and is very popular with the local community, I'm delighted to say. Getting the balance right between turning that bitumen into parkland, but making sure that there's well and truly enough on-street parking for residents and for visitors to the area is always a tricky formula to get right. But I'm confident that not only is the formula right here, but it's got the backing of the local community, which is really, really important. And I want to thank the team for facilitating those multiple stages of community development and coming up with a plan that is going to turn this really special part of North Melbourne into an even greener, more amenable, more community-focused space than it already is. And adding parkland to a space that is so near the centre of the city is never a simple and cheap thing to do, but this is a really, really nifty proposal that I'm delighted to be supporting. Thank you too to the state government for a grant that will go part of the way towards constructing the park, and I'll be delighted when it opens. So I think this concept plan should be endorsed so that we can move to the next stage, which is to tender for works and build it. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. And to Councillor Deutsch, a seconder. Thanks.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Bedford Street Pocket Park. I'm actually familiar with this area because it's a little patch of grass at the top of Courtney Street, if anyone's familiar with it. If anyone's tried to ride a fixed-wheeled bicycle up Courtney Street, they also probably would have taken a break in that park at certain times. It was a mistake I made some years ago. So I have to admit, there's a few of us who need breaks in that park, and I also like that because there's not many... It's one of those parks where I can hide and no one can find me. But that being said, I will always, well, I'll pretty much always support, you know, the development and expansion of open space in the city of Melbourne, and even a barbecue. So I'm very delighted that it has, you know, pretty much, oh, actually, no, it was over 65% of the community was in support of this program. So I support the motion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other speakers to this new pocket park item? None. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. That brings us to item 6.7, Governance Rules Amendment, consideration of community feedback. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, I'm looking for a mover to this motion. Councillor Leppett, thank you. And a seconder for this motion, Councillor Leleux, thank you. Back to you, Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm speaking a lot tonight and I'm zooming in whilst you're there with a big crowd in South Bank, so apologies to everyone. I'm assuming you prefer me to be here with my snotty nose than there, but I'll try and be brief. This is the process that precedes the actual change to the governance rules, which should happen in December at the council meeting. The purpose of this report is to consider community feedback, 14 pieces of external advice, of which 13 have just given us a yes, go ahead with the proposal. So I want to thank everyone who's provided that feedback. But there were also some pieces of direct feedback to this paper. Thank you to Kelvin Thompson and Mary Lou Howie for your suggestions. There's a suggestion to clarify that where there's a public holiday, the notice period should be extended, or to define the notice period in terms of business days. The reason I'm not in favour of pursuing those changes is that the proposal's been designed to add exactly 1 week, but not more and not less, to what the usual process is. So normally a meeting is on a Tuesday. The papers go public the Thursday before. They go to councillors the Wednesday before. For the type of proposals that will be subject to the extra week's notice, those days will be the same. The Thursday it'll be public, the Wednesday it'll go to councillors. If you start adding to those days by factoring in public holidays, well, suddenly you'll have circulation of documents to councillors on a Tuesday, or sometimes even publication of council papers on a Tuesday. Tuesdays are our meeting days. Our council business team is already flat out facilitating our meeting days. So it's actually by design that we've chosen when circulation of papers should happen. And it undoes the intention of the proposal to chop and change what day the distribution of papers should happen. And so that's the reason I think we should politely decline that suggestion in the submissions to alter the way that the proposal works. There's also been some feedback internally saying that the proposal may be difficult to manage given there'll be three meetings worth of meeting papers online at the same time. Unfortunately, that's a misreading of the proposal. There could never possibly be any more than two. But if there is more feedback from within the administration as to the merits or not of the proposal, I think the council should still hear them in advance of the council meeting in December. But unfortunately, I think the feedback as described on the front page of the report may misunderstand the way the proposal works. And if that's because of the way it's been written and it's not clear enough, well, obviously we need to clarify what that is. So that's an open invitation to the administration. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Councillor Leleux.
Fully support the recommendation. Thank you for the to the people who submitted feedback. Looking forward to implementing this governance rule, which will make the city better and also the governance part a lot better. So thank you to Councillor Leppett, and more than happy to support this as the Chair of Governance and Finance.
Thanks, Councillor Leleux. Any other speakers to this motion, our governance motion? Note that I'm putting it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Well, this concludes reports from management this evening, and it does bring us to general business, but noting there are no items of general business for consideration on our agenda this evening. I'm asking councillors, do you have any urgent business that you'd like to discuss at this time? No, thank you. Then that brings us to item 9 on the agenda, which is public questions. And it is another 15 minutes for us to allow time for public questions. And I can see 1, 2 hands up already. So I'm going to start with you, Anthony, if you could come forward and you're experienced at this, state your name and your question, not more than 96 seconds. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I realise it's late and I'll try and be brief. My concern is, again, the City Library Skateboard Park. There's been no action taken. Hopefully we will have a summer this year. We haven't had a summer yet. I'm concerned that once summer does come around, this the safety of the skateboard park at the State Library is going to be a major concern. I'm still personally traumatised every time I walk past there and I see skateboarders active in that site and out of control. Nothing has been done. And it's been well and truly close to a year since I first raised this issue. My other concern relates to the Rathbown Street bike path. I don't think there was sufficient consultation. I think it's a bad design, bad implementation, and inappropriate location. No consultation was undertaken with Carlton Gardens Primary School, which desperately needs some sort of planning in relation to a drop-off and pick-up. None of that has taken place. We're seeing more congestion with less cars in the city now than what I remember back in the 1970s and the 1980s. My final point, which I'm concerned about, or two final points for you at the time, is the free tram zone. I know that in the recent debate, the Public Transport Users Association, and presumably supported by the Greens, wants to get rid of our free tram zone. I think we need to expand it and extend it. It's certainly a major consideration that I made in moving into the city. I think it's an excellent system that's available to ratepayers and residents, and I'd like to know what the council's intentions are. My final point is, will the City of Melbourne develop a family strategy plan which will look at how this city provides services and planning provisions to facilitate families? Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. I don't know, Dean, whether you had any updates on the dimples for the stairs at State Library. Yes, please, because you've got to speak into a microphone so that everybody online can hear you as well. We could do a...
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and through you and to Anthony. We have been working with the State Library, who are planning to put some of the mitigations in place, but as they're caught up in a little bit of bureaucracy at the moment, and so they have not been put in place. City of Melbourne's infrastructure around the perimeter of the library has had the infrastructure put in place where it was missing at the time, including some of the garden beds. I mentioned to Anthony earlier that I'll go up there tomorrow to make sure that's still the case. They are removed every now and again. I'm happy to meet up with you to do that.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Dean. We had Rathdown Street. We'll have to take that on notice and come back to you on what consultation was done with the primary school and report back. The free tram zone is another contentious issue in our transport strategy. It's not supported, but there are many individuals at the council who do support it. That will continue to be ongoing free debate with state government, but noting that as part of our transport strategy, there are lots of high priorities to get people into active transport and make the city work better. And then family strategy, again, we might need to take that on notice. I'm looking at Councillor Dr. Ball or Councillor Hakim in terms of what might be in our different community and inclusion strategies. It's probably stretched out across all of them. But we have had a lot of feedback lately, even about comms to families, just alerting families to services and activities in the city. And we have so many, I think that's probably a good idea. So look, we'll take that one on as a good idea. Anthony, thank you in terms of how we highlight more of that. We love the fact that, for example, Docklands has become such a family neighbourhood now that there's a school there, build it and they will come. It's just lovely to see. Thank you for your question. Mr. Tony Penner had a question.
It's a question, maybe a bit of a statement, put thinking caps on. We've heard a lot tonight about the basketball court and the impact that that's going to have in Southbank when it is gone. We do know the original plan is that the Undercroft was meant to have been completed before the developer came in and it would have just transitioned across to there. But I noticed around Southbank there are a lot of empty blocks that have been bought by developers with planning applications approved in most aspects. And I was thinking maybe council could talk to some of those owners of those blocks and say, hey, can we just temporarily use that space for however long it might be envisaged to create the basketball court and the undercroft? At this rate it's going, it could be 5 years. But it's just a thought. Talk to some of those people that own that land. Melbourne Square could be a good location. There's a lot of land there.
I saw that with, was it Hickory's Block across the road from Boyd when they had the courts in there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of land at Melbourne Square. That's a good thought. Good location.
Melbourne Square.
Yeah, there's a lot of land there.
Right.
Remember, they've got four developments to go, and then they've only got two.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And there's the car park with all that nefarious activity that goes on as well. Might need to put lights there, maybe. So good idea. We'll put that down on the list. But certainly we've all written down, all councillors have been texting tonight saying basketball courts has to be something that we can do relatively quickly and easily for our community. So we'll get back to you on that one. And I know Adrian presented on that as well. Thank you. That looks like it is it for question time at the end of the meeting. Thanks so much to our participants. And that brings us to item 10, which is closure of open meeting. Thank you to all of our members of the public and, you know, our local community. Thank you so much for coming and supporting this meeting this evening, for your active participation and your leadership. We really appreciate it. To members of our team, to everybody joining us online, it's been terrific, and councillors too. It's 8:45 and we're declaring the meeting closed. Thank you very much.